Good morning. This is John Kalkowski coming to you from PAC Expo 2018. Today I'm here with Allison Keene, who is the president and CEO of the Flexible Packaging Association. How are you today, Allison?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and about the Flexible Packaging Association.
Sure. I took over the helm of the Flexible Packaging Association 2 years ago, literally last week. So this is my second PAC Expo and my second year really leading what is the only association for the U.S. manufacturers of flexible packaging in the United States. Flexible packaging is the number one growing packaging segment in the United States and globally. We have about 140 members, and that includes converter members that actually take film, foil, paper, make it into the package that the consumer product companies, the food companies, pharmaceutical companies use for their products. And then we also have associate members, so anybody who feeds into that, either raw materials or equipment or any services that goes into flexible packaging. And we do advocacy, and we do research, and we do networking opportunities, and we basically, our mission is to promote and protect flexible packaging in the United States to keep it the fastest growing and keep it a successful manufacturing business. It's about $31 billion right now, and we employ about 80,000 people across the United States.
So what would you attribute the success of flexible packaging to?
Well, it is very cost effective and very environmentally friendly. So even though the majority of our products may be plastic, at least in part plastic, and plastic these days is not getting the best attention as far as media is concerned, it actually is lighter weight, uses less energy, less greenhouse gas emissions, less water usage, and of course, transportation wise, it's a lot lighter than trying to transport, you know, glass or aluminum or steel or something heavier to package your products in. So from the 1950s and really, really over the last 20 years, it's become ubiquitous when you go into the grocery store or you go into a CVS pharmaceutical. It's more and more companies are moving to flexible packaging, so there's because of the cost savings and the environmental benefits.
Are there any market segments in particular that where flexible packaging and pouches are growing more quickly?
Well, interestingly enough, so it started with the baby food, really, right? So it went from glass jars, which were breakable. You had to open it, had to use a utensil. You had to feed your own child. Now it went to pouches with the spouts. The kids can hold them themselves. If they drop it, it's not going to break. They can feed themselves. You don't need an extra utensil that you have to wash, et cetera. And that's really what opened the market up about 20 years ago. And now you're hard pressed to find a glass jar of baby food. So from then it has moved steadily into salty snacks, on the go, you know, bars for breakfast and things like that. And certainly even now it's moving into dairy products. So you see the sour cream in the pouch now, and people are working on other things like peanut butter, jelly, and things like that. And really every single segment in the food industry, with the exception of tobacco in the United States, is a growing market for flexibles, whether it's pouches or other.
Yeah, interesting. Here at the show, we saw the Chobani stand-up pouch.
Yeah, which for the yogurt.
For yogurt, which is gaining a lot of acceptance.
Yep.
And I've heard quite a bit of buzz here at the show.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. One of the other things that I understand about flexible packaging is that it offers a good billboard for the product. Can you talk a little bit about how important branding is with flexible packaging?
Yeah, I think branding and shelf impact is important for any packaging. And what flexible allows them to do is really print on all sides. So three sides, four sides. If you have a stand-up pouch, a lot of times you can pick it up and look at the bottom and there'll be branding and information even on the bottom slab. If and when you move from, say, we had a new product in flexible that went from corrugated cardboard in the frozen section to a flexible pouch. And instead of just being a flat cardboard where you just saw one side of it, it was a nice big pouch that stood up and you could see the entire brand and you could see the packages inside and what you were buying. So it does offer a lot more space and in a stand-up format to put your brand on it and put all the information you want the consumer to see and to, you know, do really, really specialized graphics so that it stands out amongst your competitors.
So stand-up pouches really seem to be booming right now, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And what are the benefits of that?
Well, again, I mean, I think it's you get a lot more product to package ratio, because you can really form it exactly for what you need. So like for coffee, for example, I mean, it's literally no airspace. It's just the package and the product. So it uses less material and it saves companies money, but then it also stands up instead of laying flat or being round. So you have this really nice billboard to print, get yourself impact, and to, you know, get your brand distinguished from the brand next to you on the shelf.
What are your other retailers asking your members for these days? Are there any trends that you see developing?
I'm not sure the retailers are asking as much as the consumer product companies are. I'm more in tune to what our customers are looking for versus the consumer product companies, which would be the retailers. But certainly anything that can stand up on the shelf by itself, anything that can help to be less of an impact for the worker at the retail to put it on the shelf. So for example, you might have a corrugated cardboard box with the pouches standing, and all you have to do is take the front off and, mm-hmm. and put that on the shelf. So somebody's not literally, take for example, the pouches for M&Ms. Somebody isn't opening up a box and putting the bags of M&Ms onto the shelf. They're literally putting the box on the shelf, taking the front slab off, and there are your stand-up pouches, all nice and beautiful, right on the shelf. So shelf ready, easier for the workers in the retail segment, but still giving the consumer product companies the shelf awareness and the shelf impact that they want.
Caps and closures have been an important part of the success of pouches. And are they members of Flexible Packaging Association also?
They are. So they would be supplier members if they're doing fitments, is what we call them. The closures, the caps, all that stuff. A lot of the converters actually make them as well. So we have kind of a hybrid of converter associate. You might blow your own film and make your own fitments, but you also convert it into the final product. Or you may just supply into the converter. They take everything and they make the final product.
These days, the films are very specific for flexible packaging. Do you see any trends developing there among your members?
Sure. I mean, the films are so specialized. They're so innovative. You know, the normal consumer doesn't even know what goes into it. And you might have a film that you think is one layer, but it's 7 or 12, and every single layer has a specific property that does something, you know, whether it's protecting the product or making sure that it isn't punctured so that the product leaks but it's so incredible, because over the last 10 years, the films have become lighter and lighter and lighter, but yet stronger and stronger. So for example, when you go buy chicken, you don't have to put it in another bag because that film protects it and it's not going to leak, or meat, you know, any kind of meat or fish. What they're really working on, I think, today, because they have done so much lightweighting, but still have retained, if not increased, the strength, is looking at trying to get monolayer, so one type of plastic or one type of whatever substrate they're using, so that it's more easily recyclable in the end. Because a lot of times what happens with the multi-layers, you might open a chip bag and it's got a layer of aluminum foil in it, and that's good barrier protection, so your chips stay shelf stable, and when you take them home, they're still fresh. But that's really hard to get the plastic and the paper and the foil separated at the end of life. So they're working a lot on trying to get the same barrier protection, same protection for the product, but have it in a single material so that it can be recyclable at the end of the life.
So isn't that really kind of the crux of the issues these days, and at least sustainability-wise, for flexible packaging?
Yes, that's our number one issue, is letting people know how sustainable it is throughout its life cycle. Like I said before, less water, less transportation costs from a petroleum aspect, less greenhouse gas emissions. However, at the end of life, consumers want to be able to do the right thing. They want to be able to recycle that. And about 50% of our stuff, because it is multi-layer, is not recyclable right now. It can go to waste energy. It can go to some chemical recycling, but putting it in the blue box and getting it mechanically recycled with the rest of your, you know, sort of highly recyclable is not an option at this point. So they are also working on things like, you know, like I said, the mono layer that would be able to be either store drop off or into the blue box.
So shelf life is a really important part of this. And with the mono layers, are they able to attain the type of shelf life that
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. So, I mean, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So, food waste is something like 40% in the United States alone. And food waste actually, specifically in the landfill, is the biggest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. So, we don't want to substitute what we have now for something that is not going to keep it shelf stable, not going to keep it fresh, and is going to contribute more to that food waste. So right now, some of the things that the manufacturers are making are good for some segments of the food industry, but would not be great, and would not have the same shelf life as the higher barrier protection like foil and the multi-laminates. But again, you know what? In 10 years, 5 years even, who knows? They're all working on it.
Well, in another part of the arena, many of the film manufacturers are working on biodegradable films.
Sure.
What's happening in that area?
Yep, biodegradable, compostable, starch-based, hemp-based, any plant-based material. The good news is they have them. They work. The bad news is not everybody has composting in their neighborhoods, their cities, or their counties. So you can make compostable package, but if you don't have a compostable infrastructure, that will not compost in your backyard or in the landfill. So we have to do a better job of sort of updating our infrastructure in the United States to start taking the type of packages that we've been making and that have become ubiquitous over the last, 10 to 20 years. We're working at the FPA with the Congress right now to try to get some federal funding for that. So there was an infrastructure bill that was supposed to come out in 2018. It's now not going to be till after the election, probably 2019. And what we're talking on both sides of the aisle, both to the Republicans and the Democrats, is about infrastructure is bridges and roads, but it's also recycling infrastructure. And for every one job that you have in the landfill, you could have seven or eight jobs in the recycling. So let's put some money in there. Let's have some, incentive, a grant program, something, to get waste management companies interested. Because of course, they need to make money to
Sure.
stay. So they're not going to take on something that's going to be a loss leader. But if there was an incentive program, if you got enough critical mass, people would have more composting. We would make more composting packages or compostable packages. And CPGs, the consumer product companies, would want them. But also mechanical recycling. Can we tweak the infrastructure so that it can start taking some of these multi-laminates? Is there other infrastructure like chemical recycling or waste to energy that we need to invest in so that we can start getting these packages out of the landfill and into basically recovery, and recycling?
And how receptive is Congress to
Yeah, very receptive. Like I said, both sides of the aisle thought it was a really, really good idea. I mean, in these times, it's hard to find something that's a bipartisan issue, but it seems, knock on wood, that right now, it is, and people are interested.
Okay. When it comes to sustainability, what kind of hurdles is the industry facing when it comes to plastic?
I think the biggest hurdle is consumer perception. At this point, it's an emotional issue. 80 to 90% of the ocean debris and marine debris that you see and you hear about is coming from Asian countries. It's coming from China. It's coming from India, some African because they don't have recovery systems. They don't have municipal garbage infrastructure. So really, banning a straw in DC is not going to help that issue. But people want to do the right thing. And that's why emotionally they say, well, single-use plastics, even though most of them are flexible plastics, are bad and we've got to reduce them. Even though it probably won't help, the marine debris in China, it makes them feel better. So for our aspect is we've got to do a better job of educating folks on the entire life cycle and why plastics aren't the evil thing that they've been that the media has been portraying them as, but are actually an environmental benefit. But in the end, we still have to do a better job of making them recyclable and getting an infrastructure, not just in the United States, but other places around the world, so that it is collected and it is reused or recycled in some way.
The Flexible Packaging Association obviously represents a large part of the packaging industry. How do you work with government and non-government associations and organizations on getting the word out about
Sure.
plastic?
I mean, the basics are lobbying. So we go to state houses and we talk to environmental committee members. We talk to speakers of the House, president of the Senate. We go to Congress and we talk to folks on EPW, for example, which is the environmental committee, both in the Senate and the House. But also partnerships are huge, right? So we have partnerships with folks like TerraCycle, which is one of the biggest recyclers globally. We have partnerships with the Plastics Association, the American Chemistry Council. Our members are partners with us with things like organizations like Material Recovery for the Future, which is looking at infrastructure. We also have a big partnership with Dow with their Energy Bag program. So their Energy Bag program is where you can take your non-recyclable molten materials and you can put in a bag right next to your blue bin. It's picked up by the same waste management firm. The multi materials go off for waste to energy, and the recyclers go off to mechanical. Recyclable products go off to mechanical recycling. So partnerships is the greatest way to do it. A lot of the companies are also part of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, Ocean Conservancy, all folks that are actually working globally, particularly in Asia, to address the marine debris issue.
And the marine debris issue, is that one of the biggest issues facing flexible packaging?
It isn't, but we kind of get swept in with it. I mean, for the most part, again, it's not in the United States. Actually, the Pacific Garbage Patch, the National Geographic, had a article on that earlier this summer and basically said it's all fishing gear, commercial fishing gear, I mean, 90% of it. But again, since it's an emotional issue and folks don't want to litter and they don't want to see that, any plastics get swept up into that. So not just rigid, but flexible and everything else. So we all have to do our part in solving it and educating the public on what really can solve that problem versus, like I said, banning a straw in, you know, in DC, which will not.
So are there any other major issues that your members are facing these days?
The other major issue that we're facing is the trade issue, the trade war issue. First starting with aluminum foil. And obviously we use that, again, for barrier protection for food. We also use it for pharmaceuticals, for medical devices. It's the best when it comes to no oxygen, no bacteria, keeping things sterile. And with the aluminum foil tariffs, not only on Chinese products, but on Canada and Mexico, that has increased the cost of foil, and it has moved some converting of that outside the United States to bypass the tariffs. And then in addition, with the retaliatory tariffs coming from Europe, from Mexico, from China, from Canada, that's affecting all types of products, plastic products, chemical products, capital infrastructure, if you want to, you know, to get any steel or machinery parts, things like that. So it's really been a full court press to try to keep United States jobs in the United States and keep the costs low as possible and to help the administration get the new NAFTA done so that we can get rid of some of the tariffs with our biggest trading partners in the North America and then obviously concentrate on the Chinese and the European as well.
Very interesting. So what are the key drivers that you think are shaping the future of flexible packaging?
I think the key drivers definitely recyclability, compostability, biodegradability, and getting the consumer to feel good about using our materials again and understand why they're, you know, environmentally beneficial and, you know, plastics are not the evil thing that the NGOs would like you to believe.
If people want to learn more about what FPA is doing, what would be the best way to do that?
So obviously www.flexpack.org is the Flexible Packaging Association's website, but we actually just launched a brand new consumer-facing website, so it has a little bit more information with regard to recyclability, with regard to marine debris, why flexible packaging is a sustainable, you know, alternative to other packaging types, and that is www.perfectpackaging.org. So we encourage folks to go visit that site as well. That has a lot of our information. It also has a lot of information from some of our members who have, you know, made videos and infographics. It's got a really neat interactive display looking at how long you can increase the shelf life. So bread in a bag, for example, is 2 days. And if you click on it, bread in your plastic bag is 12 days. So it has a nice food waste interactive to really show consumers and educate the public what we believe is the real issue and not the emotional issue.
Well, thank you very much for sitting down and talking with us. I would like to encourage people to speak with the Flexible Packaging Association. I would also mention that Flexible Packaging Magazine does a lot of work with the FPA and is a good source of information on flexible packaging also. So,
Absolutely.
Allison, thank you very much for talking with us, and I hope you have a good show.
Great, thank you. My pleasure. You too.
This Packaging Perspectives podcast has been brought to you by the BNP Media Packaging Group. To hear other related podcasts, please visit packagingstrategies.com to help you stay current with developments in the packaging industry. If you would like to suggest a topic for a future interview, please email me, John Kalkowski, at kalkowskij at bnpmedia.com. Until next time, this is Packaging Perspectives.